Hare Krishna. It's on. So we're reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We've been discussing the six characteristics of devotional service, bhakti. He explains that when one performs devotional service, in the beginning he experiences kleshagni and shubhada. And kleshagni means that devotional service or bhakti removes all sufferings and creates auspiciousness. So he explains that our suffering is due to avidya, ignorance. That's the primary cause. Then he says suffering is due to ignorance and different types of sins which are performed because of ignorance. And so we suffer. From last life, we acted in ignorance. Ignorance means the bodily concept of life. So then he's trying to explain. It's a very important discussion because most devotees don't understand the power of bhakti. So after sometimes they're practicing devotional service for some years and they feel lack of inspiration or lack of taste in devotion, and then they seek some inspiration or some understanding from outside the field of bhakti, they consult astrologers or they go to Bhrigu and find out about their past life or their future life or no future life or whatever. You're getting liberated. Usually everyone's getting liberated. Everyone's going to build a big temple and everyone's getting liberated and everyone's going to be rich and famous and healthy and happy. It may be true. You have to see what Krishna's plan is. But if we actually study these verses of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, then we probably, if we really study these and understand these, then we wouldn't probably go to any astrologer. Because we realize that it's pointless, ultimately. Waste of time. Because our charts are with Krishna. He's the master astrologer. And bhakti is Krishna. Bhakti is non different from Krishna. So now, in a systematic way, Rupa Goswami is trying to explain all these different aspects of sin and suffering and how they're destroyed. So in the first wave, first chapter, 23rd verse, which is continuing from where we left off. Actually, we didn't finish the purport yesterday. And Vishwanath is telling, happiness and distress are, because we say that when you take initiation, then your karma is finished. First of all, you're not generating any new karma because you're acting on the platform of true ego. You're not acting independently. You're acting as a servant of the Lord, so there's no more sin, because everything you're doing is on the spiritual platform. You're not acting with the body anymore. And whatever's remaining, whatever we had at initiation, that's destroyed by bhakti itself. So then people say, oh, then everyone, when they're initiated, everyone should go back to Godhead. They get initiated in the morning and then just give up your body in sunset. Go back to Godhead. Because the body is only remaining because of karma. The body is created by karma. And it remains and exists in this world till its Prarabdha karma is finished, and then you get another body according to your Aparabdha. And keep on going endlessly. So the devotee, when he takes initiation, his karma is finished. So whatever, when he stays on, then it's all Krishna's will. And this is bhakti. And we think something else, that's avritam. And we think so many things. We really, most people don't accept this. No, my karma is not destroyed. So then, because then the logical questions which will be asked, which the acharyas are asking and answering, well, if all the karma is gone, then why do we see the devotees suffer? They get disease, they get accidents. This is a logical question. So then the acharyas, they say, which we wouldn't accept, even the most stalwart acharyas like Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath tell us. They say this: the karma for the devotee, or the actions, what he's experiencing in life, are directly given by Krishna. Although it may sometimes look similar to the chart, there may be some similarities, but more often there's so many differences. Chart says one thing and your life is another thing. So therefore it's not much help to look at a chart, because you don't know which parts of the chart will be true and which parts will be false. Because Krishna's doing like jadu. He's like, you know, moving it around according to his will. Vishnu Chakravarti explains in his commentary on yesterday's verse, which I forgot, we didn't finish. First wave, first chapter, 22nd verse. Happiness and distress are also seen in the devotee, even with the destruction of all Prarabdha karmas. Because Rupa Goswami is explaining that the word Prarabdha means happening now, and the word Aparabdha means not happening, but will happen next life. So even the Prarabdha karmas, which we're born with, which give us this very birth, as sudras or dog eaters or Frenchmen or Russians or Americans or whatever, that's all destroyed. So he says that happiness and distress are also seen in devotee, even though all his Prarabdha karmas are destroyed. Happiness is one of the incidental results of practicing bhakti. And this is a verse from later in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Vishwanath quotes here. Hari Bhakti Mahadevya Sarva Muktyadi Siddhaya Muktayash Chadbutash Chasyash Cheti Kavad Anudruta. All the perfections such as liberation and wondrous enjoyments pursue the great goddess of devotion to the Lord like maidservants. So someone is performing Krishna Bhakti, then he gets all kinds of siddhis and even liberation and enjoyment, just like maidservants. The distress experience, so that's happiness or special powers. Now the distressed experience by the devotee is sometimes given by the Lord, not by his karma. Asyaham anu grinami harisheta dharam shane. This is part of a verse from Bhagavatam, which they don't say, but that's from Bhagavatam. This tato danam tijantyasya swajana dukadukitam. Oh yes, this is from 10th canto, 88th chapter, 8th verse. This is the one that all the Indians know. They know the idea of it, and they're very afraid. This is the Mahabhayam shloka, the shloka that creates great fear in the hearts of Indians. Krishna is telling, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. This is, usually they understand it, oh, if you worship Krishna, if you become a Krishna Bhakta, he'll take away everything. Your house, your factory, your money, if I especially favor him. We don't know who he's going to give that special favor to, so I don't want to play Russian roulette with Krishna. I'm a Kropati now and everything's fine, and I'm afraid if I approach that little blue boy that he'll do some favor to me and I'll be in hot and be in bad straits. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. So someone reads this verse and they say, wow, this is your God. I mean, Shiva doesn't say anything like this in the Shiva Puran, and Parvati never says anything like this in the Devi Bhagavat, which she spoke. It's called Devi Bhagavat. So I don't know. Krishna, you stay where you are. So now, Vishwanath is telling here that by doing bhakti, by becoming a devotee, all kinds of enjoyments and liberation, mystic powers, they come behind the devotee. Despite, no matter how low his birth is, in the previous discussion yesterday, someone may be born very low birth due to their prarabdha. They take birth as a dog eater. That's the first thing, their birth. The birth is low, janmaishwarya shruta shibir, the janma. The birth is very low. And that's the beginning of the suffering, is the punishment of low birth due to sinful karmas in the previous life. That's the first installment of suffering through prarabdha. But now more suffering will come, which is prarabdha in this life. As he grows up, he'll get chicken pox and measles and this and that, and so many things will come. That's only one thing. So the discussion we've had up to today on this subject, Rupa Goswami is explaining by citing different verses from Bhagavatam that the prarabdha is actually eliminated, even though he has his low birth as a dog eater, chandala, by doing Vishnu Bhakti or Krishna Bhakti. He becomes so pure and so decorated with all the good qualities of the demigods or of a brahminical class that this fifth class man becomes actually qualified with all the qualities and attributes of a first class man, someone who takes birth because of their prarabdha as a Brahmin. And then that's seen in his behavior, they say, oh, you're a special chandala. All the other chandalas use this vile language and they just do all these things, but you're so peaceful and you don't seem like an ordinary Russian. You seem something different about you. Oh, it's Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam. It's certainly only the mercy of Guru. So that's the first thing. And then all this whole stockpile of prarabdha is going to come at the age of 4 and 5 and 7 and 10 and 29 and 30. That's all. It's all taken away. That's eliminated. That's what he's told us so far. So now there all this causes of suffering, which is the prarabdha, is taken away. And then he was also destined to have very little happiness. That's also part of his prarabdha. But because he became a devotee, because he surrendered to the Lord, then Krishna, he's going to give him so much happiness. And that's what the first part of this discussion Vishnath is saying, that he gets wondrous enjoyments at pursue the goddess of devotion. There's another verse like that in Mukti Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman. Mukti Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman, that the goddess of Mukti stands with Anjali. You must have heard Pushpanjali. It's like this, flowers in your hands. Pushpanjali. So the goddess of devotion stands with folded hands, rather, the goddess of liberation. She stands with folded hands before the devotee, Mukti Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman, waiting to serve him. So okay, I was destined to suffer so many things and not have much enjoyment, and now I became a devotee. Well, that suffering is not going to happen, and I'm going to get so much extra pleasure and extra enjoyment and happiness. And no one's going to question how that's coming. Oh, I'm getting all this extra happiness and enjoyment. And all my other dog-eater friends, all my old dog-eater friends, they're not enjoying the same. They say, hey, what kind of dog-eater are you? Well, you have this stripe on your forehead and these beads around your neck. No, I'm not eating dog anymore. I'm eating prasadam. And they say, oh, you really seem like you're enjoying life now. Oh, this is Krishna's mercy. But then a dog eater later on, after a few months, he says, oh, Vaishnav dog eater, my old friend, how is it you're suffering now? You seem to be suffering now. You had some accident, now you're in the hospital. Well, what is this bhakti? It's like, I had an accident also. I was in the hospital, and I don't have any stripe on my forehead or any neck beads. And then he said, oh, Krishna has arranged this. And that's actually the fact. That's what he says. If suffering comes, the distress experienced by the devotee is sometimes given by the Lord. So we should not mistakenly accuse the Lord of being a sadist or some kind of person who enjoys inflicting pain on others. But he has his own plan. And the plan is simply to bring us to the point of loving service. Now, so the main cause of any suffering for a devotee is the will of the Lord. Now there's one other reason. There's one other cause of suffering. Does anyone have an idea what it is?
New sins.
Excuse me?
New sinful activity after initiation.
Yeah, well, this... Well, this shouldn't happen, because that means that if one is stays, you know, fixed in knowledge. Because what is sin? Sin means to act whimsically. Act whimsically. And we act whimsically or independently when we're foolish or ignorant. So one who stays fixed in knowledge, then there's no chance for him to act whimsically, because he understands his identity. Later there'll be questions. Oh, you're going to answer this question? Yeah. What is the context of what you're saying exactly? They can suffer. No, that's a little bit different point. They can willfully accept the reactions of others so that they can be benefited, and they take on the suffering. That they can give that as an answer. But the individual devotee who is not willfully doing like that, like Vasudevadatta or Bhakti Tirtha Swami, whom you mentioned. But Vishnath is saying here that the suffering is a result of offense to the Vaishnavas. I think you have to latch that door, you know, you have to upside. So these are the two causes. Whenever we suffer ourselves as devotees, if we're following and we're trying to serve and we're not willfully committing sinful activities, as one devotee mentioned, if we commit new sins, then they'll get reactions. And whether that reaction comes in this life or next life, that remains to be seen. Because sometimes devotees, they do sins, but they don't get reaction in this life. It can come in next life. When he says that suffering is because of offenses, Vaishnava Parad. So we'll go on to the next verse. And I've kind of summarized some of these points. You may read my notes also. Now he quotes Padma Puran. Rupa Goswami says, Aparabdha phalam papam kutam bijam phalon mukam krameinaiva phaliyeta vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. Padma Puran is saying, for one who is engaged in Vishnu bhakti or Krishna bhakti, step by step the aparad, kuta, bijam and parabdha karmas are destroyed. I don't know if that's here, this analogy, but one analogy that's given is just like when someone is stringing flower garland. Maybe close those curtains, because of the light, the flies are coming over here. Thank you. There's one more on the other side. Get that one. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. If someone has a bunch of flowers and they're stringing a garland, they'll put one flower on and then another, or say it's stringing leaves, that's even better because there's not much space between leaves. If you have a leaf and you have a needle and a thread and you're making a leaf garland, maybe tulsi leaves or something, some mala of tulsi patra, so you put one leaf and then another leaf and another leaf, so the needle is going through one leaf and then the next leaf, so it seems that they're happening one after the other. I mean, one leaf is putting on. But because it's going so fast that it looks like one continuous motion. So this is the analogy, and on this commentary I've heard discussion on this verse. It said by doing Vishnu Bhakti, it says step by step, the aparabdha, kuta, bijam, and parabdha karmas are destroyed. So some we may think, well, that means my parabdha is going, some is going this now, and then 10 years from now some more. No, it's very quickly. Just like, how can you time how fast you put one leaf on and then another leaf and the needle is going through? So that's how fast. What we're doing, the needle and the thread is like the performance of bhakti. And the leaves are like these different stages of suffering or sin. A parabdha, which is experienced in this life. Aparabdha, which are reactions we could experience in next life. And bijam, Bijam are the tendencies. The bijam means the tendencies to sin, which can fructify and become parabdha, depending on circumstances. Then kutam is like a stockpile. It's like a stockpile, and then from that you take a bijam. So parabdha, like the kutam and the bijam and parabdha, that's all in this life. And that parabdha is just lying there. I mean, that'll carry in this life, go to the next life, and then that'll go through the different stages. Aparabdha, then kutam, then bijam, then parabdha. It goes like this. So he says it's very fast. It's actually very practically instantaneously. You can't even time. What's the time between one leaf going on and the other leaf? There's no time between the leaves. It goes just so fast. You make the garland. So Vishnu Bhakti so quickly eliminates. So Jiva comments. This verse from Padma Puran makes clear the fact that bhakti destroys parabdha karma. The word in this verse, papam, is modified by the words aparabdha phalam, kutam bijam, and phalon mukham. This verse particularizes sinful reaction. It's a lot of... It's easier if I read my notes. Anyway, I thought I would just try to read this purport, but my notes are more clear. But phalon mukham means approaching fruition. This means parabdha karma, literally commenced karma, that which is happening now. The sinful reaction presently being experienced in this life is happiness and suffering. Bija means the reaction which is about to become parabdha. So when we say bijam, maybe you've heard these terms when you read about these stages of sin. Kutam. Kutam means like a pile, like a mountain pile. And bijam. So bijam means a tendency to sin. For example, someone has this bijam inside their heart, or they say in the chitta, embedded in the chitta. They have this bijam for smoking. Let's say smoking a cigarette. Because in the last life they smoked so many cigarettes. So it's a tendency. Bija means a tendency to sin or to break the laws of the Vedas. So now he's going here and there and he never comes across anyone smoking. He never comes across any cigarettes. But somewhere he goes to, gets on an Indian train, gets on a second class train in India, and he's surrounded by people smoking. And then someone may even have a bidi, and they say, oh, do you want a bidi? And then when he sees the bidi, and he touches the bidi, because he has a tendency to smoke a bidi that's lying as a bijam, it hasn't become phal, it hasn't become fruit yet, but due to the udipan, or the circumstances, then that tendency, that bijam, it sprouts, and then he smokes, and then that's a parabdha, then he suffers. Because then maybe there are many bijas for smoking lying together. So then he smokes once and then again and again and again and then he gets cancer. Or he gets some difficulty. So this bijam becomes parabdha in this life. So he says the sinful reaction presently being experienced in this life. Bija means that reaction which is about to become parabdha, about to be experienced in the form, and it is in the form of impressions. So the bijam, he's saying, is impressions, what we say samskaras. Generally, commentaries say it means a tendency to sin. In other words, it's lying there. This is another cause of suffering, because we're discussing here the characteristics of uttam bhakti. Even as a sadhaka, practicing vaidhi sadhana or raganuga sadhana, these two characteristics will be experienced, and one is kleshagni, which means a relief from all misery, relief from suffering. So it says that bhakti does that. So then the next thing, the question is, well, what is the suffering? What is the cause? What is the suffering? What is the cause of the suffering? The cause of the suffering is avidya. And because of avidya, we engage in papa karma, which creates all these different kutam bijam, all these reactions. So now he's explaining how this bhakti, one by one, it cuts all these causes of suffering, so therefore that's why bhakti removes suffering, because if you take away the causes, then there's no result, there's no suffering. So kuta refers to sinful reactions which are about to become bija. In other words, you have this pile, say you have a pile of seeds, that's the kutam, and then you take out one, according to the time, whenever that time for that seed is to come out. So you take out one seed, then that's there. That's near you now. It's out of the pile. Now you're experiencing you're already experiencing Prarabdha. Now at a certain time, then this seed in a certain time and circumstance, this seed will fructify. And then you'll experience the fruit of that seed as Prarabdha reactions right now. So Kuta refers to sinful reactions which are about to become Bija. Aprarabdha phalam means those reactions which are not Prarabdha. They are not to be experienced in this life at all, but which cause effects in the form of Kuta, Bija, and Prarabdha. There's a footnote. It should be understood here that all of these reactions, that all of these are reactions to previously committed sins. These reactions progress from subtle to gross forms over many lifetimes. I mean, karma, as Prabhupada often said, to understand one's karma is extremely complex, because it's coming over many lifetimes. Even we have this whole category of sinful reactions we're carrying in our citta, which is called aparabdha, which may not, we'll just carry it into the next life. So how long will we stay in the material world? Forever, practically, in samsara. And then just see how powerful bhakti is. This whole category, all these different categories of reaction are annihilated. These aparabdha karmas have been acquired without beginning, anadi siddha, and are infinite in number, ananta. Sounds rather distressing, right? It says the karma is anadi because the jiva's existence in the material world is anadi, which means no beginning. Only a certain number of these reactions mature at a certain time, and therefore the other varieties would not be infinite. In other words, aparabdha karmas are without beginning and infinite, but prarabdha karmas are not. looks pretty hopeless. If you don't actually take the bhakti, then you'd never really get out of this cycle. In this work, aparabdha phala has simply, in other words, in this book, aparabdha phala has simply been called aparabdha. Bija and prarabdha were mentioned in verse 21, and the remaining type not yet discussed. Kuta may be included in aparabdha. So aparabdha kuta, this big pile, is there. That's kind of this big pile of sinful desires. Sometimes some of those are taken out, and that becomes bijam, and we experience in this life. And others are just left there, that big pile, which is aparabdha, or called kutam. They're synonymous. Kramena means sequence, like we say bhajan krama means the sequence or the steps of bhajan. So kramena means that the reactions are destroyed gradually from recent to previous, from prarabdha to bija to kuta and to aparabdha. So this is one meaning, that first what you're experiencing right now is destroyed, then those things that are lying as bija are destroyed, and then that big pile of bijam called kuta is destroyed, and then this unmanifested group of sinful reactions called aparad, that's the last to be destroyed. We're not even aware about that because it doesn't have any effect in this life. But he's saying here that, however, verse 21 mentioned that immediately the prarabdha karmas of the dog eater were destroyed rather than gradually. Therefore, one should understand that the prarabdha karmas will be destroyed. Oh, this analogy is there. In the matter of a needle piercing 100 lotus leaves. The needle appears to pierce the whole pile of leaves in one instance, immediately. Like, yeah, you pile all the leaves, like you put all the leaves up and then you put the needle through. So you compress the leaves and you go through 100 leaves in one stroke. But the needle is actually going through 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. The needle appears to pierce the whole pile of leaves in one instance, immediately. But actually, it pierces one leaf at a time, gradually. Similarly, the karmas will be destroyed gradually, gradually, though from the perspective of the unlimited duration of the jiva's existence in the world, they are destroyed all at once. Thus, the contradiction between two statements is resolved. In other words, bhakti is so powerful that what would take lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes to undergo in one stroke? What is that one stroke? What is the one stroke? Guru Parashraya, Sri Krishna Dikshadi Shikshanam. We take shelter of Guru, and then we take Diksha and Shiksha, then that's it. You know, all the karma is finished. Then the next verse, because they're all, when we hear all of them, then we'll give some summary. This is Bija Haratvam Yata Shaste. This is from 6th Canto Bhagavatam, chapter 2, verse 17. This must be about Ajamil. Taistanyagani pujanti tapodhana vratadibi nadharma jam tadridhyam tadapi sangri sevaya. This verse describes how bhakti destroys the bijam. The last verses we were discussing describe how bhakti destroys prarabdha and the aparabdha. This is spoken by the Vishnu Dutas. Although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life, so now they're kind of talking, one may practice yoga or jnana, and by that, he may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity. Neutralize means minimize or reduce to some extent the reactions to sinful life by performing austerity, giving charity, observing vows, and other such methods. These pious activities, punya or sukriti, cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of Krishna, he is immediately freed from all such contaminations. So when they say uproot the material desires, this refers to the bijam, as bijam means karma bij or kam bij. Kam bij means the seed of desire, which is based on our karma. But in the spiritual world, we also have a kam bij, a kling. It's called a kam bij mantra. It's not seed, not the seed of lust or the seed of desire. It's the mantra, which is the seed of love, transcendental love. And in this bija mantra, Radha and Krishna are contained, and their madhurya love, their sweet love, is also there and cling. Because Krishna is the transcendental God of love. Jiva Goswami says, this verse is quoted by Rupa to show particularly the destruction of the seed, which means desires which cause sinful acts, which cause karma, which cause suffering. So there's, from last life we engaged in some sinful activity. We stole something. So when we do that action of papa karma or sinful activities, that creates papa bijam. So that papa bijam is stored in our chitta. And then we take birth, and so now we have this bijam, we have this seed of sin, the seed or this tendency to act sinfully again in that particular way, that tendency or that seed to steal again. So then in this life, if a circumstance comes up, then that seed will fructify and will steal again. And then that causes suffering, because we get arrested and we go to jail. So he says that desire which causes sinful acts, which cause karma, which cause suffering. This is called the karma chakra, samsara, the cycle. Vishwanath says, this verse shows how the seed of sin acts as a cause of sin. This verse shows how the seed acts as a cause of sin. Pujante comes from the root pun, which means to destroy. Sins, whether they're heavy or light, are destroyed by austerity, charity, and vows. The root, the subtle form of the sins arising from our evil nature, is not destroyed by pious acts. The root, however, is destroyed by bhakti to the Lord's lotus feet, because bhakti destroys even the desires for sin. So we're experiencing different reactions due to sins, and we can minimize or neutralize those reactions by observing what they call atonement. It's called a prayaschitta. We can do certain austerities or different charities or pujas. So then, by the Lord's arrangement, he accepts that austerity or charity or puja. Then he neutralizes the reaction. But still the desire to sin is there. It doesn't take away the desire. That's the problem with prayaschitta. Now, so this concludes how he describes how bhakti actually destroys all the different stages of sin, which is what causes suffering. So by this he concludes that when it becomes a devotee, then he gets free from suffering, which is caused by sin and the different stages of sin. And now the next verse, he describes how bhakti destroys avidya, because avidya is another cause of suffering. But at this point, we could read whatever we've collected here about in review of these subjects. So this is describing the six characteristics of bhakti. This is all commentary on the verse number 17, and now we're on verse 25. So for eight verses, he described this kleshagni. Kleshagni shivada moksha lagutakrit sudurlabha sanjananda visheshatma Sri Krishna akarshani. These are the six characteristics. So the first one we've been discussing is kleshagni, relief from all material distress. There are three causes for this material distress or suffering, and that is papam, which means sins, and then bijam, which means desire or tendency to sin. It's either sins or the tendency to sin, which becomes sin, and avidya, which is the root cause of all material desire. Rupa Goswami has explained in these verses how bhakti counteracts all the three causes of material distress. This first one, the first cause of distress, papam, sinful actions. What are sinful actions? Sinful actions produce two reactions. One is parabdha, and the other is aparabdha. So the origin of the whole thing, which he's going to get to, is avidya. When we're in ignorance, and then we act against the Vedas, which means we act sinfully, and that creates a bijam, and then that bijam fructifies into sin, sinful act, and then that causes suffering, which means klesha, which is manifest. Then the second reaction of papam is aparabdha, which is unmanifest. So we really don't have to consider that. So this parabdham or papam, that means manifest sinful reactions. And he gives an analogy, or one Chari gives an analogy. Just like a disease, if it's caught in an early stage, it can be cured. But it's very difficult to cure if it's allowed to become chronic. So these bijams we have in our heart, these seeds of our tendencies for desire, if we don't practice bhakti, then they're going to fructify, and we'll have to suffer so severely as we grow. So sinful reactions are difficult to eradicate once they're manifest. However, devotional service can remove even manifested sinful reactions and suffering they bring. Our birth is a tangible result of our prabdha, or our papam, our sin, of our karma. And aparabdham papam means unmanifested sinful reactions. Srila Prabhupada, he writes in his Nectar Devotion, devotional service is like a blazing fire which burns up limitless amounts of unmanifest sinful reactions. So then someone can ask the question, how do unmanifest reactions cause suffering? So here's how the cycle works. If we commit a sinful activity, and again, sinful activity means against the rules or laws of the Vedas. The Vedas are full of punya karmas or vidhi, or things we're supposed to do. If you do these things, then you live peacefully and you get rewarded according to the Vedic paradigm. And it says, but if you violate these laws, then you get punished. And a violation of the Vedic laws according to your particular varna or ashram is known as sin or papam. That's pretty straightforward. So a sinful action generates two types of unmanifest reaction. One type creates direct physical or emotional suffering. And the other type creates indirect suffering by increasing our sinful propensities. So one, we just see, we have our minds always disturbed, we have phobias and fears, and we're always anxious about things. Like some people are always worried. They're worry warts. Warts? What do they call them? What do they call it? Warts and wards? W-A-R-T-S? Warts? Wards.
Worry
warts. Anyway, they worry a lot. Some people, like you're going, a group of two or three ladies or gents are going somewhere, and then say, okay, let's go. What about this? And what about that? And you know, they just ask 1,000 questions. And the other people say, yeah, forget it. Get in the car. We'll go. We're going out to the park or whatever. Have a picnic. And no, but what if it rains? And should we bring an umbrella? And we need some. What about the mosquitoes? We need off. And what about? And just worry. You know, and the people say, well, you shut up. Just like, you know, let's just go there and have fun and deal with it. No, but we have to be prepared. So they bring umbrellas and this thing and tarps and that, you know, it's like, you can't have any fun at all, you know. You worry yourself to death. So some people have like, and some people are what they call happy-go-lucky. And of course they also maybe suffer for their, you know, blasé nature, but. So these kind of disturbances in the mind, these anxious feelings or afraid of strangers or I can't sleep in the dark at night, these are all different types of suffering that actually disturb our peace. And happiness, or inner peace and happiness, they come physically and psychically, or it's mentioned here, direct physical or emotional suffering. Other type of reactions, they create indirect suffering by increasing our sinful propensities. So these are the bijam. These are all these bijam create the tendencies. Like we may not act immediately, but someone is very lusty. A man is very lusty. That means this tendency to be lusty, because not every man is lusty. Some are quite cool-headed, but that tendency to be very lusty is due to has lots and lots of bijam, lust desires, whatever you call it, desires for enjoyment with woman. So he's always his mind is full of these bijams, but they haven't fructified yet. But the tendency is there. And everywhere he's looking, you know, wherever he looks, he sees some, you know, lady, you know, even old, young, anything, sees some lady and thinks, oh, I can enjoy. So he's always harassed because of his lust, because he has this whole stockpile of bijams, these seeds for sinful act, you know, enjoyment or whatever, sinful activities in that particular way. So then that's always causing another type, the propensity for sin due to this bijam creates also suffering. Other types create indirect suffering by increasing our proclivity, for example, for sex life, thereby increasing our sexual desires, impelling us to act in that way and engage in future illicit sex and entangling us in a karmic cycle of suffering. When sinful desires increase, sinful activities increase. When sinful activities increase, sinful desires increase. It's like, you know, desires increase activity, and activity makes more desires, and it's like that's what, you know, there's karma bij, act in a certain way, act sinfully, then you act sinfully, creates another bij. When sinful desires increase, then sinful activities increase. When we perform sinful activities more and more, then that creates bijam or desire. Then sinful desires increase. It is a self-perpetuating cycle. Amen. The more we try to satisfy our desires, the stronger they become. To break the cycle of bondage, we must tolerate sinful desires and not act to fulfill them. Not being reinforced by unmanifested reactions, they will gradually leave the heart forever. That's why if we stay fixed in transcendental knowledge, we're not, all those bijans are there for sin, but we're understanding, oh, I'm not this body, I'm Krishna's servant, and let me always engage in Krishna's servant. So the bijans are there, but you're not acting on them because those bijans are related to your material body and material consciousness. But now we're existing in a spiritual platform and spiritual consciousness. Our ego has changed. Our ego is I'm Krishna Das or Krishna Dasi. So my ego is not placed in the body where all those bijams are lying. So they're there, and because we're not acting on them, and bhakti, eventually they're gone. That's very fast. So they'll gradually leave the heart forever. Krishna explains this principle in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 28. Yesham tantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva mohinirmukta bhajanti chatridavrata. That when the bhajan is dridavrata, when we're very determined in serving Krishna and performing bhajan, then very quickly our heart becomes purified. To make significant advancement in Krishna consciousness, we must engage in Krishna consciousness with unwavering determination. However, this is somewhat difficult when a stock of unmanifested reactions continuously generates suffering. This is difficult when the stock of unmanifested reactions continuously generates sinful desires that distract us from bhakti. It's very interesting. We're trying to be determined, but we have all these bijams still lying in there, which are gradually being exhausted. But if there's lots of them, then their presence there, lying in our chitta as bijams or seed, their presence creates a tendency or a desire. Tendency means an inclination or desire. It doesn't mean you act on it, but the tendency is there. So you're doing bhakti, but like little some agitation is there, some slight scratching. Your mind is being scratched or pulled in that direction slightly. But you're saying, no. No, but because you have some sankalpa, some realization that this is not me. This is the old me, the leftover me, that's the lingering me that's still lingering there. And then you turn towards Krishna. And then when that happens, then Krishna himself, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna, Punya Shavana Kirtana, Radyantakshta Ibadrani, Virunoti Sritsatam, Krishna says in Gita and Bhagavatam, that he himself cleanses those tendencies from the heart. So the tendencies, they become less and less and less as we increase our bhakti more and more and more. So it's up to us. And everyone has, this is something directly experienced by every devotee. When they first join, they maybe really have tendencies in one direction. Be really lusty for food, and they're always like trying to find Mahaprasad here and there and everywhere, and stashing and stealing and buying and, you know, whatever. Trying to get this Mahaprasad. And that's good, because as they get all that Mahaprasadam, it actually purifies those bijams for gorging oneself unlimitedly. I mean, there's some kind of disease. I don't know the name of it, but I met one lady. She had this disease when she was a child. You eat until you practically die.
Anorexia.
Yeah, anorexia. Yeah, that's
anorexia.
It.
Oh, did you say eat?
Yeah, she get in these eating binges. You know, little girl, she's like 7 years old, and she's going to the kitchen to just eat cookie and cake and this, that, just anything. Just eat and eat and eat, and then she's like go unconscious. I don't know what that's. Yeah, bulimia. Yeah, I don't know what it. But it was a problem. so then she came into Krishna consciousness and then was taking prasadam, and somehow it kind of cooled her brain down. And then every once in a while there was still some bijams lying there for this activity. So she was confessing me, and I wouldn't see her sometimes. We were having classes and she was coming regularly. I wouldn't see her for a few days, and she came and said, Maharaj, I had some problem. So what's that? And she said, I just locked myself in my room and ate till I died. this some visions were coming like this. So there may be some slips, you know, because of these tendencies, they might catch us. But then Krishna says, we become rightly situated again, then we go forward. So it's difficult when a stock of unmanifested reactions continuously generates sinful desires that distract us from bhakti. By acting piously and controlling our senses, however, we can avoid sinful activities, and we don't increase our sinful proclivities. This gradually exhausts our stock of sins allowing us to engage in devotional service without distraction, which is called Dridha Vrata. This is kind of... time goes so fast. This is called the evolution of unmanifest sin. Maybe you don't want to hear about this type of evolution. Because, you know, the manifest means parabdha, happening right now in the mind and body and heart. Because it says emotions, right? So now, that parabdha comes from papam. Papam comes from kutam. Kutam comes from aparabdha. It's like this. This is the stage. And what they say is you have this big pile of aparabdha, and then when you take birth, the super soul, he reaches into aparabdha, and he takes out a big pile of it. Big pile of disease, piles it up, and that's called kutam. It's like a pile of wheat berries or wheat, like seeds of wheat, piles it up. That's called kutam. And then he takes out one, puts them down, that's called bijam. Then those bijams will create so many tendencies, and then parabdha is actually the bijam fructifying. So this is like this. The cycle of unmanifested reaction goes through four stages. Aparabdha. Aprarabdha. A-P-R-A-R-A-B-D-H-A. This means not happening. This is the unmanifest reactions. At this stage, the reaction is completely unmanifest, and there's no perceptible effect. You can't feel it, you can't think, like you may feel, everyone knows what it's like to feel greedy or lusty or envious. It's a feeling, it's a tendency, and that's coming from the bijams. That's the feeling, but then the action, then that's the karma. There's the bijam and the karma, which is parabdha, happening now. But you can't perceive. Kutam means this is the pile. Kuta means like anukut, means like a pile. Pile of proclivities. there's a whole big pile of different sinful proclivities, but then when a particular ones are taken out, that's a bijam. It says this, the reaction evolves into a psychological disposition towards sin. This is what is explained as kutam. It's a psychological disposition towards sin. Then bijam, this is like a general orientation towards just being a bad guy. You know. This is called kutam, the sinful proclivity. Kutam. It's actually literally, kutam means a pile. So it's a big pile of proclivities. The reaction evolves into a psychological disposition towards sin. Then the third part, which is bijam, this is sinful desire. There, that sinful proclivity evolves into a specific desire to commit a particular sinful action. That's what I'm saying. That this kutam is a pile of proclivities to act in a variety of ways, of sinful ways. And then you take one of those seeds out, and that seed from that proclivity pile, or that, you can say, tendency pile, is a particular specified tendency to steal. Yeah, proclivity means inclination. So it's proclivity means there's a whole pile of inclinations. One to steal, one to enjoy a woman or a man, one to eat too much, one to be big, one for pride, or one for controlling. So then that's the big undifferentiated. It's not specified. Then you take one seed out, and it's a specific tendency, and that's known as a bijam. The sinful proclivity evolves into a specific desire to commit a particular sinful action. So that bijam is that tendency to sin. And four, parabdha, it means the manifested sinful reaction. The sinful desire causes us to commit sinful action and suffer the concomitant reaction. The following story shows the four stages. One sinful man is destined to become a thief and to suffer punishment. Because in last life, he was a thief and he has all this bijam. However, this reaction is not immediately felt. This is right now time. I don't know where I got this from. A sinful man is destined to become a thief. Anyway, I'll just read it. A sinful man is destined to become a thief and to suffer punishment. However, However, this reaction is not immediately felt. It is stored for a future birth. That's aparabdha. In his next life, the reaction begins to manifest as an almost unnoticed proclivity towards dishonesty and cheating, which is called kutam. This proclivity gradually intensifies and eventually manifests an explicit desire to steal, bijam. Finally, this desire to steal, or bijam, causes the man to steal and undergo the consequential suffering, which he experiences right now, parabdha. This makes sense. Bhakti, or devotional service, eradicates all four stages of sinful reaction in the order of their development. First aparabdha. This is very interesting. First aparabdha, then kutam, then bijam, and finally parabdha. But it's again that analogy of this. Yes. From unknown subtle, to known, to what we're directly experiencing, our disqualifications. And then, because we say bhakti gives us all these good qualities, but someone says, I'm like a new devotee, maybe fairly fixed up, and doesn't have much tendencies for sin, but he hasn't exhibited all these good qualities and things, which also come later. So there's some more discussion about bijam. This is the same verse as from Vishnudutta's. It's kleshagni, which means this bijam. The second cause of suffering, or sinful desire, is bijam. The Vishnudutta's have explained, which we mentioned, only devotional service can uproot the sinful desire, the cause of sinful activity. Vedic rituals like charity and austerity can neutralize the sinful reactions, but they can't neutralize sinful desire. Srila Prabhupada gives two examples. A person may be cured of VD, venereal disease, by medical treatment, painful medical treatment, but because the sex desire remains in his heart, again, he implicates himself in suffering. So we may do charity or austerity or something to get free from some parabdha that we're suffering from. I have these intense headaches, or I have these intense headaches, so they say, you do this thing and you'll get rid of it, or I have this problem. So you do it, and temporarily you're rid of the problem, but then again it comes back. So then he says, he gives the famous example, the elephant. The elephant bathes in the river, becomes very clean, and then he has a tendency of rolling in the dirt. That's his fun or whatever. So when he comes out of the river, then he rolls in the dirt and becomes covered with dirt again. So devotional service uproots the sinful desire. Therefore, this is the best method to attain relief from suffering, because suffering is caused by these different stages of sin, aparabdha, and kutam, bijam, and parabdha. So tomorrow we'll discuss the actual root cause of all of our suffering, which is ignorance. Of course, ignorance is bliss, where it's folly to be wise. They say that also. That's only a phrase, really. Is there any question? Yes.
So my understanding from this, I want to check if it's correct, is that a devotee takes initiation and all the corrupt karma is destroyed. So after that, the devotee still has to deal with the aparada, kutam, and bijam, and that would be a source of suffering.
When one is initiated, he doesn't incur any more karma. That's the first point.
Okay.
Because he's acting on the platform of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I am a servant of Krishna. My duty is to serve Krishna. I'm not this body. So now there's no more sins coming to him, because he's not acting whimsically. Sin is caused by whimsical action, or independent action, where you violate the codes of the Vedas. So a devotee now is responsible. He's responsible, and he's agreeing. He has faith in the Vedas, faith in Shastra, and he agrees to follow the Yama Niyama. So there's no more sins coming to him. As we read here, that from the beginning, what happens is that the aparabdha, which we're not even aware of, that's not even being experienced in this life, that becomes destroyed immediately, aparabdha. That is the most subtle form of sin. Then the next form comes as kutam, which is a pile or a collection of tendencies to act in various sinful ways. Then that becomes destroyed. Then the next thing is the bijams. After kutam is bijams are specific individual desires to act in sinful ways, for stealing or for eating meat or illicit sex or these type of individual desires. Those tendencies, because this is described in Madhurya Kadambini, it says like the aroma of materiality. I think maybe you've read Madhurya Kadambini. There's some that these tendencies, they become, as one advances in bhakti, he says, up to the level of, I think it's bhava, he says, there's just some aroma, there's some, the tendencies, these specific tendencies to act in sinful ways, they become, depending on how seriously you practice bhakti, they become less and less and less, and finally, at the level of a sakti, attachment, they're just like some faint aroma. Oh, I have some slight desire to act wrongly in this way, but it can't really touch the devotee at all. Whereas in the beginning in sadhana bhakti, although all these stages of sin are being destroyed, some are destroyed immediately. There's no more, because actually the statement sometimes is not clearly understood, because sometimes they say, when you take diksha, when you're initiated by a guru, all your sins are destroyed. They say like this, but actually what they mean, what the clear thing is, you will not make any more sins as long as you stay connected. But independence is there, and you can go against the order of a guru, and you go against the shastra. That's your free will. But free will means that it means you're acting whimsically or independently. But if you stay under shelter of guru and Krishna and follow the principles and do your service, there's no more sins. So that's why I say when one takes diksha and follows, there's no more sin. This is really the correct thing. There's no more sin. Now, whatever he has in his stockpile, that this aparabdha, which is the whole discussion here in Nectar Devotion, the aparabdha, the kutam, bijam, and parabdha, that's destroyed very quickly, like running the needle through a pile of lotus leaves. And depends on how much we seriously take up bhakti. In other words, the point is that bhakti has the power that if we practice pure bhakti, then all that can happen in one day. In one day. That's possible if one had acquired. Otherwise, what happens is that one is initiated and he's chanting, he's following. So this aparabdha goes very quickly. How what time? They don't say, but they said practically it's all simultaneously. But we may see that it takes some few years or whatever. Aparabdha goes, then this whole tendency, this whole general tendency to sin goes because we become fixed in knowledge. So basically, a devotee for a few years, his basic tendency is to serve. As we said, this is the his anyabhilashita, the tendency to want something else becomes, his real tendency is he wants to serve the Lord and please the Lord. So then this whole pile of kutam, that gets annihilated. And then there's like lying around his living room floor, or lying around the surface of his chitta, are a scattered bunch of bijams. A scattered bunch of bijams. That aparabdha is gone, that big pile of tendencies is gone. But now, there's a few bijams, specific or sinful desire seeds, to act in particular ways. And then they may jump up and dance a little bit once in a while for the sadhaka and say, oh, come on, steal this food or steal this or look at this girl or go enjoy. Or even Krishna may test. Because then, there's this kind of like these two things going on. Like there's these scattered bijams there, and then there's Krishna. So now Krishna, he as I said, Srinivatam, so he can collect all those bijas and just throw it in a fire and it's finished. If you're, that's what he says, they take away everything. That's what we read. He takes away everything. For the someone who's sincere, very sincere, that Krishna says, I take away everything. Take away everything that's going to keep him from loving me and distracting him. Otherwise, there's some, we may be slightly haunted by a tendency this way or that way, but those tendencies, we don't act on them. Although the bija is there, we don't act on it. But we turn to Krishna, we perform devotional service. So what that tendency to act that way becomes annihilated or becomes destroyed by our execution of bhakti. And I've also heard acharyas say that devotees get purified in dreams. Even when we're sleeping, we're getting purified. That Krishna, he takes these bijams, which are desires to act sinfully in a particular way. Like say, you maybe have a desire to kill someone or whatever, or kill anybody. So then in a dream, you can have a dream, and then you'll dream that there that person is. And then you can have an opportunity to kill them. And then you say, wait a minute, I'm a devotee. I shouldn't do this. This is a wrong thinking. I should give him prasadam or whatever. So that desire is played out in a dream. And then depending on how you respond, like they say, it's not what you do that counts. It's not what happens to you that counts. It's how you respond to what happens. So when that comes in a dream, for example, say someone's a brahmachari. He has so many bijams. He has so many tendencies, specific tendencies to enjoy woman. So now he goes to sleep. And even if he's a new devotee and he's dreaming, or some lady's dreaming, you know, new lady devotee has the same tendency for man. So when in their sleep, then they meet some lady, or maybe their wife, or even some known lady in a dream. And then they get some involvement, some meeting there. Then all of a sudden, because the person is so much identifying, his ego has been transformed so much by the practice of bhakti, that ego, that transformed spiritual ego, manifests in the dream, which is even unconscious. That shows the transformation of the citta. When the citta becomes cleansed, cetta dharpana marjanam, he's unconscious. He's not consciously projecting, yes, I'm a devotee. This is actually his ta, his svabhav. His tendency is to act as a devotee. It's become so ingrained and so deep, even though he's a sadhaka, even though he's in vaidhisadhana. Then in a dream, he sees his ex-wife or whatever, and there's something coming intimate, you know, association. And he says, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm a Hare Krishna. And she says, what? So I'm Hare Krishna. I follow four principles. Just get out of here. Get lost. Then you wake up. You say, wow, that's really cool. I think something's happening. Something's really happening. You know, that my ego is becoming so transformed that even when I sleep, I'm not like, you know, Clark Kent in the daytime and Superman at night. I mean, I'm Bhakta Joe in the morning and at night also. I'm Krishna Das when I'm awake. And put on the costume and play the drama. Look, I'm a devotee, Krishna Das. See my costume, see my uniform. It's like a player on a stage. But when I take all my clothes off and I'm just lying in my bed in my kopins and it's 45 degrees outside, and you know, I'm also Krishna Das. So then I understand that actually the chitta is becoming cleansed. This bijam is actually becoming destroyed. So that's how when we our transcendental knowledge, and knowledge means realization of my spiritual identity. When it becomes very strong and fixed, then it guides us and protects us even when we're conscious or unconscious. So in this way, the practice of bhakti eliminates all these stages of sin which cause suffering. And ultimately, tomorrow we'll discuss the avidya. So this is how it works, that the bijam, the tendency is destroyed, and then the prarabdha, that's automatically destroyed because we're only acting as devotees. So then because we're acting as devotees, our prarabdha, the things that are happening in this life, which means we wouldn't get very much of this or that, we'll get so much pleasure or happiness, what Krishna will give us, and it'll remove all the suffering. And then anything he sends us, anything that happens to us, then is actually directly coming back from Krishna. So one of the symptoms of uttam bhakti is that even as a sadhaka, he doesn't consider that anything that's happening to him, oh, this maybe is some of my residual bijam, or maybe this is some of my prarabdha. He doesn't think like that. This is what we heard a few verses ago. He thinks, this is Krishna. Krishna is giving me this or that, and I accept it as that. This is what the meaning of uttam bhakti for the sadhaka is at this level of sadhana. This analysis is given there, but ultimately he sees it like this. I'm Krishna's devotee. I'm just serving him. If some suffering comes, that's his will, but I'll continue suffering. I'll continue serving. If some enjoyment comes, that's his gift. I'll continue serving. I won't become distracted or dismayed by suffering or distracted by enjoyment. I go on steadily with my service. Yes. Well, it's
what is their state at that point? You know, what's happening to them? Karma once again takes place? They're accruing karma again?
Well, that discussion will be there tomorrow about avidya. But if one, in other words, if one is identifying, if one has knowledge and stays on the platform that I am Krishna's servant and he acts as Krishna's servant, there's no sin. What is the meaning of sin? Sin means to act whimsically or independently of Krishna or Guru. So that's very clear that when we engage in activities for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, there's no sin. But when we act independently and whimsically, that means that we're, as Krishna says, we disregard the Vedas, or we disregard Guru, then what's left? You're either acting dependently or independently. Dependently means you're following the Vedic injunctions and the order of Guru, and then there's no sin. And independently means you're acting whimsically and doing whatever you feel like or want to do, and generally that will lead us into violating the injunctions of Shastra, which is the definition of sin. So when you're engaged in sin, then you get, as I always said, that you, as soon as you start engaging in sin, you press the button and start the perpetual cycle. Because then every sinful activity makes a sinful bijam. And then that bijam will have to fructify, which means the tendency to do it again. If you do it once, then you do it again. So when you stay fixed in knowledge, you don't do anything wrong once, because you're still, this is not me. This is not spiritual. This is not pleasing to Krishna. This is anyabhilashita. This is another abhilash. This is not the desire to please Krishna and serve Krishna. This is the desire to please me and serve me. So this is sinful, basically. Desiring to or serving God, that is spiritual, that is pure, and desiring anything else is sinful, basically.
Yeah, right.
It's illegal. Illicit means it's illegal. Legal means the law. So the law of the state, if you do anything, the law, there's these 100 laws in the state, and if you go against them, then you get punished. So the Vedas have the laws, so we follow them. And Krishna says that, that's a verse in 18th chapter. Yashastra vidim utrija vartate kamakarata. Nasasukham vapnoti, nasukham napuram gatim. He says that if you act whimsically, he uses that, he says, yashastra vidim utrija, vartate kamakarata. If you act according to kam, your lust or whimsy, or independent nature, and reject the shastra vidhi, the rules and regulations of shastra, the laws of the scriptures, or the law of Guru and Krishna, the will or order of Guru and Krishna, Guru Agya, Krishna Agya, then Nasasidam avapnuti, we don't get any perfection. Nasukam na paramgatim. You don't get happiness. You don't even get happiness. What to speak of perfection? And then you don't go in any higher destination. So, it's not a good idea. In other words, independence is an illusion, first of all. But to be independent of Guru and Krishna means that we become dependent on the cycle of karma.
So if bhakti destroys our inclinations and aparadha from subtle to gross, that means like from aparadha then kutam bijam, and
Yeah.
That does mean that when I come in contact with the sadhu sangha or process and end process of devotional service, which I will be engaged in by sadhu, then gradually I will build up the same circle will be but spiritual. So I will be engaged in some activity in the temple, let's say. Then my inclinations, my kutama, everything will be accumulated gradually until I will have kind of
but it's bhakti samskaras.
Yes,
that's what you're talking about.
Sadhu will engage me in something, then I aprarabdha. The next time it will be a little easier to do the same devotion.
Yeah, this is called samskara.
And then gradually I will find that my kutama, my desires are actually strong enough so I can myself decide to do the act as devotee. So
yeah, they don't. This term of aparabdham, aparabdha, and kutam, and beet, and bijam, and pravda, these are terms that are used in relation to the sins and the stages of sin which cause suffering or klesha means suffering, you know, adiatmika klesha, this means suffering or misery, and agni means to destroy. So one of the symptoms of bhakti is destroy suffering. But in terms of devotional associating with devotees and developing desires to be with devotees and desires to serve, that comes under a category of what's generally known as bhakti samskaras. Because any action we perform with our senses creates an impression in our citta, which is translated as heart, consciousness, mind. It's actually a very thin layer between the atma and the hankara. It's a material layer like mahatattva. So that creates an impression. So when we do all spiritual actions and spiritual desiring, then of course there's no reaction for that in terms of suffering. That's actually the antidote to misery and suffering. But it creates samskaras, bhakti samskaras. That's why you see some child, he's born in ISKCON or some devotee, any devotee family, and at a young age he goes over to the mridanga and goes toot 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 toot, because he has samskaras for playing mridanga in the kirtan and Krishna kirtan from last life. He rendered the service of playing mridanga. So the tendency, which if you want to compare what you were trying to do, the tendencies for bhakti in general are there, and then the kutam, which is specific tendency for bhakti in terms of kirtan, playing mridanga, is there. And then that's the bijam. Then the expression of parabdha is he actually picks it up and starts playing it and says, haripo, haripo, or whatever, when he's 2 years old. But that's not the way it's told. It just says that any action, anything we do in bhakti, any activity we perform with our senses and mind and bodies in devotional service creates bhakti samskaras. And that's eternal, and that stays with us, also the material samskaras. And they come into the next life, and then they fructify. They fructify in giving us more bhakti. Bhakti creates bhakti. So samskaras for bhakti create bhakti, and doesn't cause any suffering, and because it's actually contributive or leading to prema.
So the samskaras will replace kutam.
Yeah, that's what's happening is, as we're engaging in bhakti, which I indicated by that little anecdote of the Brahmachari dreaming and his identity, his spiritual identity appearing in the dream, even in the midst of the material attractions. So what happens is that all these material samskaras, which of course we're only talking about sin here, but material samskaras, they express themselves as punya and pap. But here it's only talking about suffering. It's talking about that bhakti removes misery. It's a characteristic. It's not talking about happiness, because no one wants to remove happiness. So it's only talking about, so bhakti removes suffering. Happiness, so why should bhakti remove that? That's, you know, you have your happiness. And it's not a glory of bhakti that removes our happiness. So one of the glories of characteristics, this is one of the six characteristics of devotional service, is that it takes away suffering. Well, everybody wants that. And it gives auspiciousness, and that auspiciousness is that it gives enjoyment and pleasure. That's really what will come up also. So then bhakti, as you do more and more bhakti, all the kutam bijam, which is causing our suffering, that goes out, which means not only all the material samskaras which cause material enjoyment, they also go out, plus ones that we're only talking about now is the samskaras which express themselves as aparabdha, kutam, bijam, and parabdha, they also go out. So what happens is the whole chitta, that's what chaitodharpana marjana means, the whole surface of the chitta becomes cleansed for all the tendencies to enjoy or suffer in the material world, which are the samskaras, material samskaras. They become removed and cleansed by bhakti, and then what they get replaced by bhakti samskaras, which is the tendencies to serve Krishna in a variety of ways. And of course that brings with it different varieties of pleasure and happiness also, and no suffering. So our whole chitta becomes, he's made nothing of bhakti, has nothing but tendencies to do bhakti, nothing but desires to do bhakti. So that, and if that is, then if he takes another birth, then all those samskaras fructify, and immediately from an early age, he's driven towards devotees, he runs towards sadhus, because you said he did sadhu sangha, so that creates samskara for sadhu sangha. And he was listening very attentively to Harikatha. So then this life he'll sit very attentively and listen to Harikatha. And all these are all tendencies for bhakti. So that's called bhakti sanskaras. Maybe after, because you're here, you're living here, the people have to go. Shai Shiva. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Ki Jaya.